honor. Anglos do not know honor. If the spirits say we win, then we win well. Not bad like yellow hair. But you come and say beat bad with bad. We say beat bad with good is the only way. Truth.
Fight with bastards and you have to fight like bastards.
Ryan was beginning to lose patience. He saw that the faces of the elders of the tribe were looking at him with hooded eyes, blank, overlaid with contempt. For a moment, he saw the futility of it.
Fine. That bakes the biscuit, friends. We came here and you helped us, saved Jack's life, and we thank you for it. Fireblast, of course we thank you. And you got troubles, bad ones. Fuck honor, Many Winters. The Sekhmen have no honor. They rape and kill and torture. Life means less than a rat's fart to any of them.
Man Whose Eyes See More unfolded himself elegantly from the far side of the council.
You tell us that yellow hair is evil and has no honor. We know these things, Ryan Cotter. And you tell us this plan to win a small victory.
Better small victories than defeats. Any defeats.
You see as children through a mist. Your ways of fighting are no different than those of the pony soldiers. Winning is not all.
Winning's the only thing.
None of the Mescalero even looked at her. Man Whose Eyes See More went on, as if nobody had spoken.
It is better that the people leave their home. Better than to fight on bellies.
It was Doc Tanner's turn to stand up, his hands waving like an agitated windmill.
I've heard enough. In my time, I have been fortunate enough to spend a little time among the people. I admire you, Cuchillo Oro, and everything you believe in. When it comes to religion, the Christians could learn plenty of lessons from the Apache. But times, they are changing, my brothers.
But honor...
Who has honor? I'll tell you who has persnickety honor. He who died Wednesday. Honor is a shield to bear home a slain warrior. It is a rag to wipe the tears of the widow. Does Long Knife have honor? Does Corn Planter have honor? Oh, my dear friends, give me leave a moment. If honor is to die, then go and ride against the pony soldiers. Death is cheap. Death with honor is easy. It is living that is hard.
Doc looked around him, catching Ryan's eye. The old man's hands were trembling. A woman ran to quiet her baby. The shaman still stood, his enormous height making everyone look up at him. He turned to Cuchillo, who nodded for him to reply.
You and your companions are all touched with death. I can taste it on you. It sits at your shoulder like the shadow of a man carrying a scythe. It cannot be right to lie and cheat in order to beat yellow hair.
The reply came, unexpectedly, from Jack Lauren. The boy, growing stronger by the hour, was already well enough to leave his bed for a few minutes at a time. He'd joined the council, leaning against the stump of a small tree. Ryan had noticed that step-slightly Moon, the teenage daughter of Cuchillo Oro, had appeared at the edge of the Council of Warriors, sitting as close as she could to the white-haired boy.
You don't know what you're talking about. I'm only 14, but I know more about the world than any old man like Many Winters. I've seen killings, more than any of you.
The cub thinks he may teach.
It's not cubs and bears and that crap. It's sick men and blasters and blood. You want to break and run like girls? Do it. Get the fuck out. Let them piss all over you. But if you want to fight and win, do it our way.
The boy sat back, eyes closing, looking once more on the brink of exhaustion. The shaman made his way around the group and knelt beside Jack, holding the boy's wrist in his long, thin fingers. It was Cuchillo Oro, finally, who answered for his people.
We have heard the words from the Anglos, from the old and from the young. Words that were not good to our ears. I have listened hard and thought long, and I believe that some truth has been spoken this day. It might be that we are too set in the old ways.
Seeing half of the senior warriors around the council ready to argue, he held up his hand for silence.
No, brothers! This is our home! To run would not show honor. It would show we are like dry branches, old and strong but ready to crack and to break at the first cruel wind. We shall try the ways of the Anglos. Ryan Calder, tell us your plan.
I thank you, Cuchillo Oro. The plan that JB and I have worked out is simple, involving an offer of peace talks that will enable you to ambush the Sekhmen. We'll send word to Yellowhair that we want to talk, try to sort out a way of living peaceably together.
We'll meet at the ghost town 15 miles to the west in the foothills. They'll expect a trap, but we'll hit them first on the way toward the meeting place. It should work. There were several trails into the ghost town, which had been a mining center during a brief boom period in the latter part of the 19th century. Called Sometime Never, it had housed 3,500 miners at its peak. 2 years later, there was no sign of the motherlode, and the population of Sometime Never had shrunk to 23. By 1911, it was down to 4. In the mid-1970s, there was a burst of interest in the old lost towns of the Southwest, and Sometime Never boomed briefly again. The dirt road was graded, and a few shops opened, selling stones, pots, and glass. A couple of eateries, an art gallery, and a store specializing in genuine reproduction patchwork quilts did well for a few heady years. It wasn't the last World War that did end Sometime Never. There had been an earthslide that made driving up the road difficult, but the nail that sealed the coffin was the establishment of a gay commune. The big AIDS scare of the early 90s was responsible for a visit to the town very late one Friday night in mid-December. A couple of dozen good old boys, juiced to the cortex, arrived in mud-smeared pickups, several with pump-action shotguns. The idea was to throw a scare into the disease-spreading wimps up on the hill. It all got a little out of hand. The rednecks didn't know that the gays had an armory of M16s, in anticipation of just such an attack. Eventually, the body count reached the respectable total of 15, split 11-4 in favor of the commune. In truth, Armageddon passed almost unnoticed in Sometime Never. By 2001, there was only one inhabitant left, and he wasn't even 3 cents in the dollar. He'd built a small shrine in his garden to a country singer called Steve Earle, who he claimed was a prophet and whose songs contained hidden clues to the coming of a new master. The old man heard the distant sounds of rumbling explosions and saw the skies darkening all around him. But he took it as a sign of the Eternal's wrath with him, and he tried to play his Steve Earle CDs more often and louder. But there was no electricity coming up the line to his shack. The EMP had knocked out all generators and power-operated installations across the land. It was winter and cold at night up in the hills of New Mexico. The old man offered to fast in order to purge himself of whatever sins of omission or commission he might have been guilty of. The fast went very well, and in just under 5 days, he was dead. The next day, Ryan took Christy and the others with him to the ghost town. Jack was, amazingly, well enough to come with them, riding on an amiable sway-backed mule. Cuchillo didn't accompany them, being occupied with the funeral arrangements for Corn Planter and Long Knife. But his daughter came as a guide, keeping herself as close to Jack as was possible. Steps Lightly Moon was so busy chattering to Jack that she nearly missed the turnoff to the deserted ghost town.
It will not come this way.
Yeah, doesn't look like it will.
The Village of Spirits is not far from here.
We call it Ghost Town.
I do not have a cunning with the words of the Anglos.
She talk better than me.
The Apache girl blushed at the compliment, letting her fingers tangle in the pony's mane as she rode along the rising trail. It was Ryan's intention to check out the township from every direction. He hoped to cover all the trails in and find somewhere that would tell them how the cavalry would come cantering in. If the Sekmen were led by General Yellowhair, then his death would be a powerful bonus. It was clear that the serious trouble with the renegades only dated from the arrival of the mysterious stranger, the tall, lean man with the hollow eyes. There was no doubt that the Mescalero saw the general as the physical embodiment of evil, and that his corpse would give them a greater will to fight against the whites. Two rotting pieces of wood supported the remains of a painted board, hanging only by a couple of rusted nails. Flory swung out of her saddle, picking her way carefully over the rutted ground in her brilliant crimson boots with the teetering heels. The miniature silver bells on the razored spurs tinkled sweetly at every step.
What does it say, O moon of my delight that knows no wane?
Can't read it.
Let me, my dove of innocence.
Doc clambered out of the high saddle and peered at the board, wrinkling his eyes.
I must confess that it is more than somewhat difficult. It's probably the most trifling piece of... Ah, now I see it. Well, well, a fine example of 20th century folksiness.
What's it say, Doc?
Any stranger's a dead stranger. Clear enough. Sometime never must have been the xenophobia capital of the world.
They tethered their animals outside a single-story building that still bore stenciled lettering on the adobe facade, Visitor Center. The remains of the ghost town straggled up a narrow gulch, with scattered mesquite bushes and red-tipped spears of ocotillo. Jack reached for his big cannon of a pistol at a flurry of movement among the scrub. Out came the skinniest cat that any of them had ever seen. It arched its back lazily. Jack knelt down, wincing at a stab of pain from his ribs. The Mescalero girl was at his side before he could even begin to straighten up.
Here, kitty.
Take care, Eyes of Wolf. You know our shaman warned you to step lightly until the healing way is done.
I'm sorry, Steps Lightly Moon.
Ryan and Christy exchanged glances and grins. The scrawny gray cat, tail poised over it like a periscope, stepped toward the boy with a strange air of unctuous pride. Jack held out his hand to the feline.
We ate cats back home.
Been places in Deathlands where the cats would have eaten you.
Just as Jack was about to pet the lean cat, its face became a mask of malevolent hatred, and it hissed at him, claws raking at his eyes.
Ah!
The albino threw himself back just in time. Steps Lightly Moon had her knife out, poised to throw, but the cat got away clean into the bushes.
Phew. Friendly place.
The steep-sided valley was a blaze of color. Tiny yellow flowers of honey mesquite, in dazzling golden banks, smudged around the base of the tumbled buildings. The pale blue of bristly gilia bloomed in a delicate patch along the sides of the dry washes lining the main valley of Sometime Never. Flame-red desert mallow mingled with clumps of Indian paintbrush wherever the eyes settled. The scent that lay over everything was that of the ubiquitous yellow creosote bush.
Gaia. It's one of the most beautiful places I've ever seen, Ryan. There were quiet valleys a few miles from Harmony and an abandoned reservoir with cool places, but this is triple lovely. You can't blame that old hermit who used to live here for trying to stop anyone ever coming up.
The people do not come here. The spirits are not friendly. Over the years, there have been disappearances. Some who went and never returned. There are many deep holes in the hills around.
Mine shafts. Old workings riddle the land hereabouts. I guess the little girl's speaking the truth. Looks like the townspeople just slipped out for a while and never came back.
It was agreed that they'd wreck in pairs. J.B. went along with Jack, Steps Lightly Moon, dogging them at every step. Doc and Lori wandered hand in hand, like the lovers they were. Ryan and Christy began to explore the sun-bleached buildings on both sides of the main street, taking care where they stepped. Most of the timbers had either rotted or been attacked by hordes of insects. Sometime Never was a comparatively rare small vill in those late days of the 21st century. The nuking hadn't touched the remote valley, and the depredations of the weather hadn't been too severe. The southwest of the Deathlands didn't suffer from the screaming gales of 200 miles an hour and the constant, pitiless acid rain that vomited down from the deeps of violent chemstorms. Everywhere, the rough-built shacks showed signs of the long-lost days before the skies burned. As Ryan and Christy walked up the hill, preceded by the skinny cat, they kept pausing to look at some new chimera from the past. Triple Scoop Rocky Road, only $2.50. The sign swung off a porch from one hook. The rest of the building had slipped wearily into a narrow ravine at its back. Ryan saw an establishment graced with the sign, Rocks, Crystals, Candles, and Rare Curios. He pushed the door open.
Anyone home?
An inches-thick layer of fine red dust covered everything. The air in the shack was overwhelmingly hot and stuffy, with an odd, lifeless quality to it. Ryan guessed that the last person who'd pushed open the door and rung the little bell had done so nearly 100 years ago. The shelves that lined the walls were mainly bare, though some had empty cardboard boxes on them. Peeling labels still clung to a few of the boxes. Pinion candles, owl prisms, mica wind chimes, honeydew candles, Canyon de Chelly placemats, shot glasses, large prisms.
What was a prism, lover?
No idea. Seen the word on sights for long-range blasters. Guess it must have meant something different back then.
Look here. The front of this closet's broken in. Some kind of store behind it.
Christy was now on her knees, rummaging around. Ryan moved closer to watch her.
No, just a lot of old boxes and stuff. Wait, something smooth in here. Got it. Oh, Gaia.
Christy held up a round crystal ball, rubbing the dust on